understand.
I don't understand.
What do you want?
What do you
You're just a machine.
You're just a machine.
The Snack Bar Games Podcast.
Always wanted to say that. Welcome back to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. I'm Graham, and this time I'm here, as seems to be normal, with Jerry and Sean and Andrew and Matt. And it's been a while. It's been about a month since our last episode, and we got a new day, Tuesday. We'll see how this goes. It's not actually Tuesday right now. We're recording on Sunday night, so there could be some big news happening Monday night at a Nintendo. We're not going to have it, but we wanted to bring the podcast back for all you guys, and it's been a while, so what you guys been playing? How about you, Jerry?
Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, that's it's a freebie from PlayStation Plus, and Jerry recently got his PS3 back, or a new PS3, yeah.
I can finally work again.
Yeah, so that was a pretty nice freebie, and it starts an interesting PlayStation Plus month, which I feel like we could probably mention. Jerry, you want to tell them about what they're giving away this month?
What they're giving away, I don't know, wait, what's coming out the rest of the month?
All right.
I haven't had my PS3 with me in a while, man. I'm not up to date on these things.
That's fair. I'm sure you'll remember when I say it, but later this month, they're giving away Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3, and giving half off of the HD-ified versions of 4 and Code Veronica.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mention that.
And they're also giving away Plants vs. Zombies, and let's see what else they had. Astro Tripper. And Jet Moto. That's obviously the best one is Jet Moto. Because everybody wants a 15-year-old racing game with a bunch of product placement.
That's an awesome one, though.
It's our favorite. But yeah, there are some interesting things they're doing with that. I feel like they may be trying to hit their stride again after the whole PSN fiasco. They're trying to do the PSN Play, and they're trying to just, like...
Wait, what fiasco?
Oh.
No,
wait.
No.
I don't even remember. I feel like there was something. No.
Are you talking about how Violent sucks to play on PS3?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. But anyway, it's interesting to see what they're doing there. Jerry also played Cloudoon X2, which
is that how you pronounce it?
I assume. I mean, it seems very Japanese.
I just call it Cloudoon and go with that.
I don't think anyone's gonna get mad at you, but that review is coming up this week. Actually, maybe up today or tomorrow. You want to say what you thought about that game? It's an interesting take on, the whole thing.
Spoilers, it's good. but yeah, I mean, if there's one thing I did like about the game, it's how I can pretty much do whatever I want with it, in the sense that I can make my own characters, make my own weapons, make my own everything. Like, I can make two characters and have them be, like, long-lost rivals or something like that.
Yeah, there's almost a sort of, social style of role-playing. You know, like, let's take these characters and let's give them a backstory.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the game itself notes that that giving backstory to your characters is completely superficial and doesn't affect anything at all. But, it's a nice touch.
Yeah. But I feel like that game is another one of these instances of the, you know, Nippon Ichi abyss, where you buy a game and then it's never over. It's never.
I do note that it, I don't know, they seem to release a lot of games where it's like, hey, buy one game and then you never have to buy another one of our games ever again.
Which would be fine if they released one game. But no, there are some interesting pieces, but you never really...
Exactly, I mean...
You really have an ending to those games. Never really are satisfied with how far you've gotten. You know, it's frustrating.
It's even worse when they release when they re-release versions of their games that already never end.
Yeah. I mean, they're good games, but just... Ugh. I want to finish them at some point. No one. I just have to... You know, resign myself to that never happening.
There's a reason I haven't actually been interested in many of their console PS3 releases, because me being the admitted trophy whore that I am, I'd probably spend, you know, a little bit way too much time trying to get those.
Yeah, it seems like those take like months to do sometimes.
They aren't even particularly hard. They just take a very long time.
Right. Which I don't blame them, but it's interesting. Anyway, how about you, Sean? What have you been playing the last, I guess, month here?
I've been playing a lot of Rock of Ages this past week.
Yeah.
And
the game seems crazy.
Is it like the target spin-off?
I know you hate to hear that. But it is... I've seen a lot of people compare it to Super Monkey Ball, but for some reason it felt more like Marble Madness in third person than Super Monkey Ball to me. Possibly because there's actually things there to hurt you instead of just stop you.
Yeah. To me it always seemed like Skee-Ball if you had a concussion.
It seems like Skee-Ball if you have a concussion and are on LSD and watching Monty Python at the same time.
Okay. Yeah,
that's more accurate. But it's good.
Yeah?
People should buy it, but they should probably wait till the Steam version comes out.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to translate those controls. You know what I'd love to see with a game like Rock of Ages? Trackball support.
What?
I want to play that thing, like you're rolling a ball, right? So like,
I want anything to have trackball support.
Oh, come on.
I don't want computers to have trackball support.
It just seems like if there's ever anything...
I want to have trackball support.
Fine. Anyway, what have you been playing, Andrew?
Alright, so I guess the game I've been playing most recently is Deus Ex. I hope I'm not the only one who's played it here.
No, I've played a little bit of it.
I played about four of it.
Yeah,
so...
Okay,
does that count?
Yeah, that's fine. How many have you two ever played the original Deus Ex at all?
I played the second one.
That doesn't count.
I own it too.
Okay. Anyway, I'm just curious I'm just curious because the perspective on this game seems to be you will love it because you were a fan of the original, or you might not like it as much because it does some weird things that only fans of the original could appreciate. But it's not so much a bad thing. I don't know how else I can explain it, but it seems like there are two completely different opinions on this game. And the people that love it the most, like myself, are people who have played the original. But as it stands, it's still a really good game on its own. What else is there to say about it?
You can talk about how you decided to play it.
Right. Yes, I mean, you know, you could take a lot of different approaches to playing through the game, like, you know, stealth or dying a whole lot because you didn't pick stealth, or dying a whole lot even though you picked stealth.
That one's me right there, the third option. this game definitely favors stealth. There's no denying that. You can try to play guns blazing, but chances are you're not going to get very far. The stealth mechanics are really, really solid. They feel pretty similar to, like I said, the original. There's lots of vents to crawl through. Pretty every building you'll go into, there are vents everywhere. There are plenty of alternate paths. Lots of guard patterns to memorize as you try to make your way through areas. If you want to try to get through the entire game without killing anyone, which I tried to do, but apparently I didn't because I didn't get the achievement for it.
Did you go to the beginning? Because I did that and I forgot about it. The prologue.
See, I keep trying to think about that. Did I kill someone in the beginning? I can't remember.
They give you a gun and they say kill all these guys.
Yeah, maybe I did. I'm pretty sure I tried to sneak past everyone because I knew from the beginning I wanted to try to get through the game without killing a single person, but I might have without realizing it. I don't know. I keep trying to go back to that, but I guess I'll just have to go through it again and just rely on my handy-dandy trank gun. But it's as an action game, it's still really good. There are boss fights in the game that that rely heavily on action. There's no way to get past those fights without having to kill the bosses. See, the thing is,
I just want to talk to him. Like, let's be reasonable here.
Well, there are certain
comic for this week.
There are definitely areas of the game where you can get through completely without having to rely on any kind of violence, not just through stealth but through conversations. And that's great. That's perfect. I love stuff like that. I love being able to talk my way out of situations. That's how I played most of Fallout 3 and a lot of New Vegas, and you know, things like that really, really help kind of bring you into this world and just help you, you know, I don't know. There's an augment for social situations that like lets you read the characters and like what their personality types is, and that really helps with certain dialogue systems. And but the boss fights themselves seem to be kind of hit and miss for a lot of people. Some people really like them, some people don't.
I've seen it like universally, people hate it. As far as my Twitter feed.
Yeah, there are a couple of people who actually really appreciate the boss fights. I'm not sure. I'm still not sure how to feel about them. I don't hate them. I think they're okay, but they definitely, if you're doing all stealth, all conversations, no killing at all, it might be a little weird, especially if you haven't been picking up any kind of lethal weapons along the way. And by the time I got to the first boss, I was kind of screwed because all I had were a couple of grenades and then some shotgun ammo, and that didn't really help too much. It took me a little while to get the hang of that, but they're not bad though. They take a little getting used to. It requires some finesse. And once if you have the right things you need, like the environment supplies you with all different things you might need. Like the first boss has exploding barrels that you can toss at him, so they don't leave you out to dry there. But It's definitely one of the weaker aspects of the game.
Yeah, it seems like one of those situations where maybe it's not the strongest aspect of the game, but if it weren't there, people would complain that there's not enough variety or that the game's not long enough or there's not enough game in it.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I kind of feel that way. I mean, aside from the pure stealth sections, or I guess you don't have to, or just action sections if you approach it that way. The other half of the game is exploring these cities and kind of taking on side quests and stuff. But then these boss battles, I think they're good because they throw you out of the experience, like out of your experience, what you're used to. And I think that's kind of the point. It's like you're going through the entire game all stealth, not having to kill anyone, or at least just not even interacting with any of the enemies. And then all of a sudden you're faced with this challenge and you have no way to get out of it but to kill him. And I think that's kind of what the game is going for, but at the same time it's kind of problematic because not everyone would want to do that anyway. So, like I said, I can appreciate what they're doing, but I can't so much appreciate their execution of it. But at the same time, I didn't hate it. I thought they were okay boss battles.
Yeah.
And there's one particular one near the end that is really well done. And I'm not going to mention it because of spoiler reasons. But...
Oh, no, spoilers. But my issue with the game is I love making decisions that affect the game. I think that's great. You know, it's one of the reasons I think Mass Effect 2 was, you know, one of the best games of the generation. But it feels like a lot of the decisions you make in Deus Ex are much, much more tactical than they are really, like, broad, affecting, you know, the world around you kind of decisions.
They're kind of in the now, like, in this one action scenario or potential action scenario, I can just sneak around these guys, shoot them all, or, you know, or rely on hacking, things like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. It's how the gameplay progresses. Like, you know, what you decide can determine the action of the next segment, but it isn't really, you know, making decisions that affect things down the road. Like, if there were another Deus Ex to follow up this one, I don't think it would, you know, import your save file or anything like that. It's not an immersive world in that way. Now, I know it isn't trying to be. It's just, there's something about that that's just a little less immersive.
Yeah, but it does, see, what impressed me about the narrative thing, because we can get the whole conversation about why you play games or whatever, but for me, like, someone fucked up my house. For me, I'm sorry, I'm playing Minecraft.
What?
There are certain things it did, like, in the beginning, I only got an hour into it, but in the beginning, there's this part where you're running around, and it's when the building's getting stormed by all these guys, and you don't know what's going on, they just give you a gun, and they're like, do something, you're the security officer, and you fight all these guys, and then you get to this glass door, and there's no cutscene or whatever, you just see a woman do, like, a flip and then disappear through the door, and if I weren't looking at that door at that moment, I wouldn't have seen it at all. And it's this whole thing where instead of seeing a character in a cutscene go, what the hell was that? I was going, what in the hell was that? And that's this cool immersive thing that I don't see a lot in games. Like, usually in games it'll cut to a cutscene, or your character will be locked into place somehow, and forced to stare at this. And it could have been triggered by me looking at it, but it didn't feel that way at all.
Yeah.
And I don't even notice the decision-making. I mean, it's not yet, but...
I feel the same way. Like, Half-Life 2, perfect example.
Yeah.
Aside from the beginning and the end, there's not a single cutscene throughout the entire game, and I love that. And I think Deus Ex has a little more reliance on cutscenes than Half-Life 2, definitely.
There's even parts where the character's walking without you walking, but you can turn
your head. Yeah, exactly.
The only way they did that was when they lock you into that coffin thing.
Yeah. But
that's really cool.
I kind of get what you're saying. I completely agree with that. I was immersed with this world. Maybe not as much as Mass Effect, because Mass Effect is a much... It's like an entire universe. So there's more...
not so much building the character in Deus Ex. In Mass Effect, you're building your Shepard. In Deus Ex, you're just building what? Like, you don't... his character is very defined, just not his physical attributes.
For the most part, yeah. And in terms of decisions you make impacting the story, I mean, they impact certain situations in the game and certain cutscenes. Like, there's a moment near the end of the game, without getting into the specifics, where you can do a certain thing that seems a little fishy to you, but you might just go ahead and do it anyway. And then near the very end, it'll impact a boss fight that I didn't even think about until after the fight was over. I was like, oh, what if I didn't do that thing? This boss fight would have played out entirely different. And there are little things like that impact the gameplay, not so much the story. But
right.
Then at the end of the game, at the very end of the game, this is also a big problem people have with it. This isn't getting into spoilers either, but you're basically set up with four different choices. And you're like, okay, pick your ending. That's basically it. None of the decisions you make throughout the entire game really matter, which kind of sucks, but it just basically says pick your ending, and then you get an ending based on this one ultimate decision you make right at the end. And, again, the first Deus Ex was a lot like that. The first Deus Ex had these three different endings that kind of, in this one last thing you did in the game, determined, you know, that ending. But making an exact choice kind of is a little strange, because it's literally buttons, and you just this button does this button does that, and then you just get that ending, and it's kind of strange, but at the same time, I didn't, you know, honestly, the ending that I got and the other endings that I saw were fine, and in the end it didn't really bother me as much, but it was very jarring at first.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a lot of games lately are choosing that path, not necessarily taking into account in development the, you know, decision-making process and keeping track of, like, a world that you shape, but just kind of giving you a final choice at the end of the game. For example, you're probably your other favorite game of the summer, Bastion, at the end of it. Just like, okay, now you're at the end of the game. Choose one of these things. And that's fine. And I guess I like it better than a set ending, that you can at least... You know, you've invested yourself in this time, and you can choose how it plays out. But I do wish it were more affected by the things you do earlier.
Yeah. See, with Bastion, I didn't mind it as much because Bastion isn't a game relying on choice. Pretty much most, if not all, of what you do in Bastion is just going to happen anyway. And Deus Ex, it's a game that focuses so much on choice and player impact and things like that, that having a decision like that right at the end, it's kind of like, no matter how you played this game, the ending can still be completely different than what you expect just from a single choice. And
yeah.
Like I said, it's very jarring at first, but thinking more about it now, it didn't bother me as much because, I don't know, I just felt the endings were kind of justified that. And I can't talk more about it because I'll just get the spoilers at this point. But those who have finished it, for those who have finished it, they don't understand exactly what I'm saying. So.
Yeah. But, yeah, okay. So, Matt, what have you been playing for the last few weeks besides it? Well, actually, including Minecraft.
Okay, so, as you guys know, I've started a new full-time job at a well-known video game proprietor.
Right.
In my local gaming establishment. So, my gaming hours have been very spare, but I've been kind of trying to scrap together as much time as I could, mainly through... on my commute, I will play Persona 3 Portable on my PSP, which I picked up after being so excited after the announcement of Persona 4 Portable in the Vita and Persona 4 Fighting, whatever that game's called.
Yeah.
And I'm really enjoying that. I played, about a year ago, I picked up Persona 3 Fez on the PS2, and I played like 5 or 6 hours of it.
Fez.
And then, is that not how it's pronounced?
I'm pretty sure it's just F-E-S.
Yeah.
But now I'm just picturing a crossover between Persona 3 and Fez, where it's the Persona 3 characters, and you can just shift the world and see it from a different angle.
Yeah. Fez's are cool.
Oh, gosh. I would play that game.
I would,
too. Yeah.
So I've been playing that, and I'm really enjoying it. And, it's like, and I played like a year ago. I played like 5 or 6 hours of it, and now I'm really getting into it on the PSP. And, I don't know if I really have much to say about it. Like, because I played about an hour of Catherine the other night, and, you know, no one knows how to present a game like the Persona team. Those guys, Jesus, their game presentation is always absolutely brilliant. The opening cutscenes are always brilliant. The interface of every part of the game is always gorgeous, and always helps the game out as much as it can. Like, you know, not counting Persona 1 and 2 or whatever, because it's from different people, and those games are pretty tough to control. But that's all I can really say about that right now. So it's just, it's gorgeous. It's very, very fun, very involving. And every other hour I've had has pretty much been devoted, at least for the last few days, to Minecraft. Which, because I never really got into it. Like, again, this is another thing that I just kind of push a sheep down a mountain. I just, like, it's a thing that I played a bit every once in a while because my friends play it. But this is the first time, because of the adventure update, that I'm really trying to invest myself in it and build cool things and hang out in a server with people that I know and people who just play the game.
And, right, so what's going on with that update?
So the update is the first thing that will make Minecraft into a video game, because they're actually adding video game elements to Minecraft, like an XP bar. They're adding a whole bunch of stuff to do with the items in the inventory, like stackable food, which wasn't stackable before, so if you're carrying a lot of food, it would take up a lot of spaces in your inventory. They're adding new enemies and NPCs. So when you start up in a server, the server will have, like, towns in it and abandoned mines, and it's not just a big blank canvas for you to draw on. You're going to be exploring this town that's already existed. And the new villain, Enderman, who is based on the fake internet urban legend Slenderman, who appears at night and breaks your stuff and freaks you out if you see him. And what else is in the update? They gave the pigs snouts, so the pigs look more cool. They look more 3D
important.
Snouts now.
This is the top bullet point. Snouts.
Yeah, I think I'm sold on Minecraft now.
Snouts.
Snouts. Yeah, snouts, man.
Snouts. Easily sold.
Yeah.
I'm reviewing Skydrift, which I need a little more time with that. That'll go up next week. But I mentioned to him that a lot of the voice acting is done, obviously, by people who don't know English very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, you'll be flying around and it'll say, "You are now in the first.
A winner is you."
Yeah,
you are now in the first place now.
I kid you not. As soon as I saw that tweet, I turned on my Xbox, downloaded the trial. So, yeah, I got to play that.
I'm sure that's in there.
Yeah.
I haven't, like, fully invested myself into a game other than Persona. Like, I played the first hour of Deus Ex, the first hour of Catherine, because I bought Deus Ex because it was on sale, and I signed Catherine out at work because we're allowed to do that. And you can borrow it for 3 days. So I played it.
Yeah. Man,
even just in the first hour, like, I was hooked. That game was awesome. I can't believe it took me so long to actually, because I was so excited for it to come to America. And, oh, my God, it's so gorgeous. And the actual gameplay is so addicting, and the cutscenes are amazing. I highly recommend it if anyone's thinking about it.
You know what? If you don't mind, I would like some insight into the game store clerk experience.
Oh, sure.
Now, I'm not going to make you talk about corporate or anything like that. That's, you know, that's territory that we shouldn't cover. But I'm just curious, you know, what it's like to be in that store. Like, I think, like, gamers as a community, and I hate using that word, but I feel like it's appropriate here, you know, the internet gaming community is really tight-knit and really insular and not necessarily so aware of these general public people who will wander in and want to buy a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering what your experience
was. I found that to be true, like, of myself, where I was meeting people and I was like, why are you buying video games? What are you doing with this? And, like, the main thing that, I mean, I have a lot to say about this. This is guy on Twitter. This is Twitter, twitter.com/Gameforium.
Yeah, who is that?
That's me. Just like tweets in the character from someone who works at a video game store.
Yeah.
Because it's part of a thing that I'm working on a project about that, but that's not materialized yet, so I'm not going to really talk about it. But just certain things, certain little quirks of customers at game stores that you don't think are so common, but sometimes, like, the main thing that gets me that I always talk about my coworkers is how specific people are in their bad tastes and their bad games they buy, where people come to the store and say things like, yo, do you have Little League 2008 on the Wii? And I'll be like, why are you coming in for that specific game? Like, if you come in and you say, oh, they've only got 2008, I guess I'll buy that because I don't have any of them yet and it's the cheapest one. But they come into the store and look for something like that. Or, like, they'll come in the day before Madden 12 comes out and buy Madden 9, 10, and 11. And then, like, trade them in the next day for 5 cents or whatever we're giving for Madden right now. Or, like, just the biggest thing that bothers me, that pisses me off. This is all, like, stupid stuff that I waste my time with the other day. This isn't anything substantial about the job. But, like, you know, people ask for your opinion all the time. And I'm fine. I'm glad to get my opinion because it's what I do is I give my opinion about video games. And I'll sit there and talk to them for, like, 10 or 15 minutes. Like, they'll be at the PS3 wall, and I'll be like, oh, well, there's Uncharted, and if you like that, you'll want to play Enslaved. These are games you've probably even heard of. You should check them out. And they're like, oh, this is awesome. And they have, like, a stack of games. Oh, thanks. You know, I'm going to get these. You know, I'll go to the counter, and they'll come up, and they'll have Green Day Rock Band in their hand. And I'll be like, what happened on your way to the counter? This game costs more than the games I gave you put together.
You failed the escort mission.
Exactly. I feel like a failure as someone who's, like, a guide on for people to buy games, like, both as a writer and as a clerk.
Clearly, they didn't know about Green Day Rock Band, so they were walking back with the pile of games in their hand, and they turn slightly to see it, and in the corner of their eye, they catch Green Day, and then they just drop everything, run towards it, and grab it, and then just
and
run
I assure you
the
that
counter.
Drop everything on the floor is what they do.
Yeah, exactly.
Wherever they are.
And then you have to sleep that up.
Yeah, and then there's little things on the corporate side. Even on the corporate side, just like on your coworker. Like, most of my coworkers know what they're talking about, and I have some good conversations about games every day. And there will be, but most of them are just like I'm a big retro gamer. I watch games. I follow games as one thing. Game history. All games exist in the same area for me. I see games like Dr. Manhattan, where there's no time period. Games all happened at once. And for most people, that's not how it is. They're like, yo, what's the newest game on the PS3? And I'm like, well, you could get Uncharted. It came out a couple years ago, but the third one's out next month. And they're like, no, I want the game that came out today. When they own three games. And, it's not like they're completing a collection. And it's the same thing for my coworkers, where, like, if we quadruple our reserves for Rage or whatever, like, we each get a free copy of it. And that's not an incentive for me, because I don't want to play Rage. So all my coworkers are like, why aren't you trying to push Rage? And I'm like, because I don't give a shit about it. I'm not going to.
Hey, now. Hold on. Sean, you there?
Screw Rage. Don't try and
yes,
sell
I am
Rage.
Here.
Defend Rage for, like, 30 seconds.
Oh,
just...
jeez. Borderlands, only better.
No, seriously, I mean, I play a little bit of it. Sean played a little
with
more.
Less
it's,
how about that?
It's kind of, I mean, it's It's a lot more of like a complete game than you think. I don't know how good it was as a shooter. You looked more at that, but I wasn't. You know, like the driving segments are interesting, and the world is. I mean, it seems like a coherent, fun thing. Maybe you know.
Yeah, they have a pretty good backstory lined up for it too.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see how the story itself unfolds.
Yeah,
Graham, are you just trying to get?
Was pretty nice.
Are you just trying to get a free copy of Rage now?
Me?
Oh, Graham.
Yeah, you get my copy.
Yeah, I'll take his copy.
But and then I was like, oh, are we going to get Batman or are we going to get? And they're like, no, we're just going to get Rage. And I was like, oh, that makes me mad. It makes you Rage. And then it's like the title. Like, have you guys seen this game Body Count?
Yes.
Yeah.
It came out last week called Body Count, and the cover is, it says Body Count and has a picture of a gun. And I went to every one of my coworkers and I said, based on the cover of this game, what is this game about? And they were like, you have a gun. And presumably, you know how many people you've killed. And that's all that we can tell about this game based on
that's
its title.
Basically what
that
game is, though.
If I play that game and there's no like meter telling me how many people I've killed, I'll be so mad. Because they will even, with one word, they're misinforming me.
No, I don't think they do that, but it's definitely very, you know, metric-based, just like, you know, shoot for, I think there's even score in that game, yeah, I mean, it's a very arcadey, I think the cover's kind of cool. I'm tired of, like, big, beefy guy with, you know, a gun and then some other guys behind him.
Today I went in and my boss was there and we were just talking about something. She goes, do you have any questions? And I was like, oh, there's a game coming out. Oh, it's an FPS. It's like a guy in silhouette holding a gun. Which game is that? And then she just started naming games. And I knew what I was doing. I was messing with her. And then she was done and I was like, okay, so all of them.
Yep. So, you know, at least there's not, like, you know, a guy in a silhouette. It's just the gun, you know.
It's
a first-person shooter. You don't even see yourself. So, really, it should just be a gun.
Looks like a greeting card for someone who's, like, whose son just went to war. just a picture. It doesn't mean anything.
Fair enough. All right. So, let's talk about some of the news that has been developing in the past couple weeks. Sean, you want to kick us off with some stuff?
Well, obviously the big one is the Persona 4 Portable and the Persona 4 fighting game,
yeah.
In my opinion at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are a big deal to the internet gaming community. I don't think anyone's going to walk into GameStop and buy one of those games.
No, I've been pushing Persona 2
can,
PSP.
Atlas can already take my money.
To reserve it. Every day, I'm like, when was your Persona? They're like, no, it's Modern Warfare 3. And I was like, all right.
Yeah, I can already take my money. Like they as soon as they go up for reserve, I'm just
When they announced it, like this is I haven't had this moment in quite some time where they announced they were like Persona 4, it's going to be the definitive version of Persona. It's by the same team. It's going to be on the Vita, and it was just one of those moments where I was like, I love video games. Like that's one of the things you think I love video games and everything about them. And it maybe all happened. I went into work the next day, and I was like, who heard about Persona 4? And no one had. And I was like, all right, I'm going to count the registers. And there were a bunch of tear-drenched $1 bills.
That brings up an interesting point that I feel is a larger issue. When special editions of games or ports, you know, enhanced ports of games like that are announced, personally, I mean, I think it's an interesting product. I may want to pick it up. But just the amount of hype that comes with a game where basically you've played it already. I mean, I'm not saying it's not worth being a product, but I know all these people is like, oh gosh, I can't wait for, you know, Resident Evil 4 HD. Like what? I mean, like sure, that's a good version of it, but like, why are you waiting with bated breath for something you can basically experience already?
It's like I'm very into a good package of a video game. Like, if a game has a special edition, like, even if it's a new game, if it's a game, like, Disgaea 4, I've never played a Disgaea, but Disgaea 4's special edition is so pretty, I'm going to buy it.
Well, like, here's the thing. If you haven't played a Disgaea, you should pick up Disgaea 4.
I'm going to. I actually have it hidden at work, someone almost we got one extra copy for special edition today, and someone was looking at it today, and I was like, you don't want to buy that, and then I put it behind the counter.
It's a terrible game. Don't buy it.
Like, yeah, it we got this copy of Green Day Rock Band over here.
And it was like, it was even like it was the only copy, and it was like getting representation. Like it was a game that should, that wouldn't get representation, and it was up on the back, like behind the counter, next to like Deus Ex and Dead Island and stuff. And I was like, that's awesome that that's there. How many copies do we have? One. Oh, I better hide this from public eyes.
Yeah, well, usually, as I understand it, those it was one of the large box special editions, and I
yes,
from what I can tell, most stores pretty much don't have a space on the shelf for that. Like, the shelf's just high enough for the game. So, like, any, like,
there's only guys
I remember
they reserved, and we got an extra one for some reason. I think someone might have canceled the reserve. But we got two copies of it, and that was one of them.
I just know my local store, they had, like, seven copies of Atelier Rona right up there. Just, like, they couldn't sell them, but, like, they didn't have anywhere else to put them, so it was just right by whatever's the new release. It's like, well, we got these big boxes. They had a couple Hyperdimension Neptunias up there. It's just like,
well,
it's actually, we don't have where to put these.
Yeah, I was talking to my boss about this, because she's not a gamer. She's hired because she's a good manager. And she's, like, learning about games from us. And we were talking about pre-order bonuses. And we were talking, because she was like, how come the bigger games get, like, DLC and stuff? And I was like, oh, because it's cheap and they know people will buy it. When you're a smaller game, when you're an XSEED or a Atlas or someone, like, you're not an Activision, you need to make some beefy, crazy thing. So, like, the game that will sell less copies will come with a soundtrack and an art book and a cloth map and a nicer case. And like if you buy the $100 copy of Madden rather than the $60 version, it comes with a card that's signed by a guy, and it comes with an extra team for $30 more. But if you get Persona 2 at the same price, you get a soundtrack. And if you pre-order King of Fighters, you get a 4-disc soundtrack.
That seems like too much soundtrack.
Not for me. I'm excited.
Never enough soundtrack.
Yeah.
Never too much soundtrack.
I get every Shin Megami Tensei soundtrack. I don't care if it's the same thing on every one.
Just seems like it should ship with the 1-disc soundtrack, and the 4-disc soundtrack should be like an Atlas store exclusive.
What's pre-order bonus?
Hmm.
And I've only had one person pre-order it, and it was someone I work with, and I'm going to be the second one. I pre-ordered Persona 2, and I'm going to pre-order King of Fighters this week. Also, if you pre-order Harvest Moon, you get a little plushy alpaca.
Ooh, I got one of those. And then my dog killed it.
Your dog is just haunting us.
I'm going to have to pre-order now to get another one.
Fair enough.
I've never played a Harvest Moon before.
They're good. You might not expect them to be, but they're good.
John, is there a Harvest Moon you haven't played?
I haven't played any of the PSP ones because I didn't have a PSP until 3 months ago.
There we go. So there's some you didn't play. I've played a couple myself. Really got into the original the Game Boy Color one. I played that a lot when I was younger, and I haven't really gotten that much into them recently, but I've definitely known some people that just really can get into it, and I understand it as that kind of game. Understand it as, like, you know, kind of the equivalent of, like, a Minecraft or something. Like, this isn't a game that I play for fun. This is what I do with my time kind of game. And,
a friend of mine, I'm trying to get her to buy Minecraft, and she was like, can I farm in it? Like, she said it as a joke, and I said yes, and then she bought it. That's how people who are friends of, or fans of Harvest Moon are, for some reason. They just love farming in video games.
Yeah, well, there's a certain sense of accomplishment, I guess. Productivity.
Yeah.
Anyway. But, so that was announced. We can talk about the
fighting game.
The fighting game. Well, I mean, there's not much to say. They haven't said much about, you know, what it's going to be, only that there will be one.
I have one thing to say about
it. It's a collaboration, but with Arc System Works.
Right.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And it's 2 months after the events of Persona 4. There's a bunch of story and Japanese details that I don't know.
2 months after the events of Persona 4, everybody just decided to beat the crap out of each other.
Persona 4, I kind of wish it was just like a Shin Megami Tensei fighter. Like, I want to be Reidu, and I want to be the guys from Strange Journey. And
yeah,
you know,
I just want to play as Black Frost in a fighting game.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they put in a lot of, you know, unlockable characters or extra characters or just cameo characters from other, but just had, like, the main roster of, you know, 8 or 10 main people be from Persona 4 or something like that.
There's going to be a Persona 3 character. I was going to say, there's a Persona 3 character, or at least one Persona 3 character that's announced so far, and there could be more.
I guess. Oh, okay. Did anyone else feel like whenever they play a Shin Megami Tensei game and get Jack Frost that they've beaten the game?
Nah, every not time really.
That's how it feels for me. I'm always like, I got Jack Frost, I win.
You get Jack Frost so early on, though.
Yeah, it's always like in the first, like, 5 hours of a game.
Switch that with Black Frost, and then maybe I can agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Among the other recent developments is the news about the Nintendo 3DS... extra slide pad attachment thing that's happening at least in Japan and at least for Monster Hunter. What is your initial reaction to that stuff?
What? That's really all I got. No, but seriously, I don't know. It's weird. It's probably going to be for people. I think people are kind of overreacting about it, but. It seems weird that so soon after the 3DS launch, there have been so many little things and changes to the system that, at this point, as everyone's speculating, there probably will be a redesign and perhaps a even relaunch and rebranding of this handheld. So I guess maybe that's the biggest thing that came out of this news, not so much the device itself, but, like, the future of the handheld.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping beyond all hope that this is just a lot like the Classic Controller Pro, where they were like, okay, Capcom, we'll work with you on this accessory for your Monster Hunter game. And it may be like some games will support it optionally, like we'll have dual analog control just kind of like as a bonus, but we won't design for it kind of thing. Yeah. If it's completely optional, if it's just like Monster Hunter is going to cost an extra $20 and come with this thing you got to plug in or whatever, that I am fine with that. Maybe extra $30, I don't know. It's probably...
Well, if Nintendo learned anything from the first DS, they can make as many variations of it as they want and still make $1 billion.
Well, here's the thing, though, about the original DS. You know, the DSi didn't sell particularly well, and that was really the first one to change functionality.
Really? Because I sell a lot of them.
Well, I mean...
Well, I guess I sell a lot of you.
It sold well by, you know, normal product standards, but just as far as... The original DS was okay, right, but I mean, just compared to the DS Lite, there wasn't this resurgence in everybody going back to buy more of them, you know, the DSiWare shop never really took off that much. It feels more like Game Boy Color was to Game Boy, that kind of thing, you know, it's just, it's successful but not quite as successful, and it was really the first DS to change functionality. So if they released another 3DS with extra buttons, that could really be a problem. Like, if they release a new one with, you know, just a different shape, maybe it's not, you know, as, doesn't have the problem with smudges, maybe it, you know, doesn't have that, that screen thing where it could scratch the screen a little bit. I haven't had issues with that, but I know people have.
Or maybe, battery life. Maybe a design that doesn't lead to confusion with previous DS models?
Yeah, something that maybe looks a little bit... I mean, I know that was the idea behind making it shiny and having it, like, you know, sparkly blue was, like, this is not what a DS looks like. It's not, you know, they didn't have the white model because that's what the DS Lite was, you know.
It's shinier. You want it.
You do want it. It's shiny. Yeah. I have it. It's pretty shiny.
It is shiny. But the black one.
But if they were to release a new one, like, you know, within, like, a year, year and a half with extra buttons, I think that would really mess them up. And they also can't rely on this attachment thing because it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've seen so many Photoshops comparing it to the Sega CD. The thing is, it kind of looks like the Sega CD. Just, like, here's this big random thing over to the side with a
Control. It's also, like, 3DS is already pretty ugly, you know? The Genesis was a pretty sexy system before they put a bunch of crap on it. 3DS is just kind of getting uglier.
Well, you know, I will say that the start select home buttons are particularly really bad. Like, if there's a redesign, they really need to make those buttons again, as opposed to, like,
the screen.
I mean, scratching the screen, I understand why. I understand what it is. I understand why they didn't catch it in QA. It's because people put this thing in their pocket, and the top pushes against the bottom. You know, it's something they should have tested, but I can understand that, like, you know, they didn't necessarily, like, stick this, like, multi-thousand-dollar prototype in their pocket and, like, push their, you know, push their leg out. Like, let me just see how much I can mess it up. Maybe they should, but I can understand what's going on there. But if you don't keep it in your pocket or something like that, you know, it has to really have that middle pressure for it to do that scratching.
Where else am I going to put it?
In a bag?
Yeah, I usually have some sort of something with me at any particular point in time, but that's just because I carry way too many gadgets around with me for my own good.
What else do you guys want to see added to it?
I don't want to see anything added to it.
A trackball.
Games. Go. Oh, trackball. You know what? You know what? Trackball and a port of Rock of Ages. I would do that.
Actually, yeah, there you
go. I got the for the DS. You know, they had that peripheral that only worked with the lighter before because it got stuck in the GBA slot. But it was a dial control for Arkanoid.
What?
I think they released Arkanoid in the U.S. without it, but for the longest time they had released that. They had released that, like, years before in Japan, and it's completely in English, so I imported it. Yeah, it's just a trackball controller that you just stick in the GBA slot. I think it works
for
Space.
Kind of amazing.
I think it works with Space Invaders, too. But, yeah, it's just, like, this is cool. I could... You know what? No, they really shouldn't put a trackball.
Aww.
I was considering it for a while there. No, I mean, obviously, everybody's freaking out about the 3DS and, like, they need to save it, and I think that's silly, because, first of all, we're going to get a new Mario and a new Mario Kart in December and November, and those are going to sell lots of systems, and, I mean, if people are worried about this not being a successful handheld, they really need to just wait, because... You know, I've seen all these, you know, online, all these people freaking out with, like, here's a 6 or 8 step plan to fix the Nintendo 3DS. There's a 1 step plan to fix the 3DS.
Release games.
Wait. Release Pokemon. Yep. Done.
Yeah.
Like, 30 million sold. Done. I mean, when that happens, anyone who doesn't have it and needs it to play a Pokemon game will buy it. Like, I mean, whether it's your thing or not, you know that's, like, that will immediately fix the install base, that will immediately make it a great place with a lot of, you know, a lot of opportunities for people to put things on. Like, that's going to happen. People are going to freak out about it for a while. It's what happened with the DS, really. I mean, not necessarily having to wait for Diamond and Pearl, but, you know, there weren't good games there for a while on that system, and then, you know, you waited a while, and Mario Kart came out, and New Super Mario Brothers, and, like, it's just how these things go.
I want a Zapper.
Ooh, 3DS Zapper.
Yeah.
There's a little thing, though, with the whole 3D branding that some people just don't want to buy it on the basis of it being a 3D system.
That's true. They kind of released it, like, on the wane of the 3D... thing. Like, we had some tentpole movie releases this summer that didn't come out in 3D, like X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I can understand that, and I think there's a lot of backlash. You know, just, like, people, like, I'm tired of 3D, but I feel like there's a difference between 3D movies and 3D games. Do you guys
true,
agree
but
with
I'm talking about the public.
Oh, sure, I agree. But, I mean, I've been to, like, retail places where I've seen people just outright avoid the 3DS on the basis alone that where the clerk themselves will explain to them that it's not just a DS revision, that it's an actual new handheld, but they still won't buy it just because they don't like 3D.
I've had this conversation with people coming into our store where they're like, or they'll do the thing where they're like, oh, well, it'll hurt my kids' eyes. And I'm like, Nintendo just said that to protect their ass in case they got sued. Like, they did tests that said that this is fine for kids to play, especially in short doses. And it's just one of those things where I'm going to give it to my kid as a babysitter, and if it screws him up, I don't want it to be my fault because yeah. I'm not going to supervise him.
Yeah, that part's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I agree, it's largely superficial on a lot of games, but really any sort of like racing game or actually like a flight combat game like Star Fox, which you know just came out, it makes it so it's a more immersive, but also a more coherent gaming experience. Like it's actually easier to play these games when you can see depth. I think, you know, like for some reason, the big spat of 2D fighters on this system, I think that's kind of silly. It's not going to be a system that really lends itself to that unless just for some reason people keep releasing them. But, I mean, they're definitely, you know, like even like the launch title Ridge Racer may be one of the best games in the system still just because it's, like, the best of the two racing games that came out, and racing games look really good on a system where you can see depth. Like, it's, I don't know.
I get what you're saying. I don't know. Personally, I don't really care about 3D myself. And that's not the reason I'm not getting a 3DS, but there are other reasons. But it's
you don't like handhelds.
Yeah, I hate handhelds, apparently.
This man.
But anyway, no. Seriously, I just, like, if they rebranded the system and emphasized, didn't emphasize on the 3D as much, I couldn't blame them because, like you guys were saying, even if 3D applied to games is so much different than 3D applied to movies because it's an interactive thing. And it doesn't matter because you know 3D is kind of becoming this negative thing. I mean, it only took a couple of years, but it went from the greatest thing ever to it's just more money for ticket prices. So why should I bother with this handheld that's really pricey?
Yeah, you know, I think people will come back to it, but I believe for another year or two, people are just gonna
Sales of the system went up last month because of the price drop. So that's something. Yeah, they went up big time, I think.
It went a lot.
Yeah.
Went up when it got really cheap.
Yeah, I know. But that's
700%, I think.
It tripled.
That's absolutely true. That's the thing that I read.
That doesn't seem correct. I believe it was something like 260% or something. That was kind of the number that I saw.
10,000%.
Yeah.
Oh, but I don't
it's
know.
It's over
9,000%. I think at this point, the price point is perfect for the system now, and I think more people will start to pick it up and see that the 3D isn't like it's there and you can use it, but it isn't, you know, the thing that is the system. The games is what makes the system, and there are going to be more games. There are going to be more games coming out for it. You got what comes out. Star Fox came out this month. Soon we got Mario. Mario, what did you say?
Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion, that's next year, I think. Mario.
Okay. Yeah.
Tetris Axis.
Oh, seriously. Come on.
Seriously, Tetris Axis.
Thor?
Tetris, yeah, Thor is coming out. That's true.
Yeah. All right, but yeah, but I don't know. I think I got not much to say about Thor. Another Thor video game, but anyway. Yeah. I don't know. I think the 3DS will be fine. It's not going to sell as well as the DS did. It's pretty clear, but it's going to be just fine.
Before we finish up, I just want to mention, since you bring up the 3DS's price point, Nintendo also just announced a new color DSi XL. Metallic rose, I believe. But the thing is, the DSi XL is still $170.
Yeah, I love the DSi XL, actually. Hmm? When people ask which DS they should buy, I tell them DSi XL over 3DS. Because the DS is better. Well, because the DS is like crap on 3DS.
No, I think it's fair to recommend it, but
parents
just
that are
the
buying
same
it for their dumb kids
point.
Only want to get them Phineas and Ferb on the DS. They don't want to get them actual 3DS games, and I tell them, look, they've already got 40 DS games that they still play. They're going to look better on here, and they're going to be bigger, and you're going to give them a 3DS, and they're going to break it.
Well, you just got to watch out, you know.
Your kids are stupid, and they're going to break anything you buy. Don't buy this for them.
It's the fifth DS I bought, and I was like, we give you a product replacement plan for $19.99. You say no? And they're like, I'm not going to pay $20 for that. I'm like, this is your third DS. You idiot. Just buy it. I just threw DS games at them. They ping off my head because they're tiny.
I'm not sure that argument is going to work when the 3DS gets support of Green Day Rock Band.
But. You know who fight those American idiots? That's a Green Day song.
I think we should end it.
End that note. All right. For Jerry, Sean, Andrew, and Matt, I'm Graham. See you next time.
Listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast. Find us on the web at snackbar-games.com.